Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I am Victor, as usual, and we welcome back Mr. Joshua Toomey. Josh, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Victor, man. Always good to see you. Ooh, voice cracked right off the top. Always good.
Well, this is you were on the very last episode of the Mars Attacks podcast. So that was episode 300 before the name change. And at this point in time, I've got some episodes in the can. But at this point in time, I've released 417 episodes. So about 120 episodes later, Joshua Toomey reappears on the podcast. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was honored to be asked on for the last Mars Attacks, and then I did feel a little hoodwinked. I thought that you were like quitting podcasting, and then you were like, no, I'm just changing the name. I was like, oh well, I thought I was a special guest, man. I was taken aback.
Come on, to me, it was a big deal to have you on 300. So here's the thing: when I started podcasting, it was the Wild West back then. There weren't a lot of people that were doing it. And little by little, people started podcasting. You came along and it was like, who's this Josh Toomey guy? You know, he's getting all these great guests, all that, you know, so I didn't know who you were. And then you see shows appear, you see shows climb over top of you and surpass you. And then at the time, I think it was shortly after you started doing stuff with Knotfest, if I'm not mistaken. And, to me, that was a big deal. I mean, I've never met you. We've always been very cordial online with one another. I would consider you a brother in podcasting, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to me, that was a big deal when that happened, to say, hey, you know, one of my guys is, you know, jump to a platform like that. That's a big deal, you know? And to me, I wanted someone for episode 300. I wanted someone to end that era of the show. I was kind of getting tired of asking people and reassuring them that it had nothing to do with the Mars Attacks movie. And also that's copywritten by Topps and, you know, whatever. I didn't want to run into any stuff regarding that down the road. And I was like, look, I already call the live stream Signals from Mars. Let's just call everything Signals from Mars and move on from that. It probably hurt me to an extent with social media and stuff like that. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, it's wild how, you know, we're all peers in all of this, you know, you and Decibel Geek and Cobras and Fire and just all of the shows over the years. And it's like, we're all bros, but at the same time, we're all like, what guests are they getting? You know, who are they talking to? What, right. You know, what download number do they got here? Oh, they got two blabbermouth articles in a row. You know, I don't know if that's me or if that's everybody, but you know, I definitely, you know, keep an eye on that, which is good because it kind of keeps a fire kind of burning under you too. You know, you don't get too complacent. You know, you have something to strive for. You know, I see shows now. I mean, like they'll be like brand new shows that come out of nowhere that just, you know, surpass all of us, you know, and like, they'll just hit the thing right. Or, you know, one of the most successful dudes kind of doing it by himself is Brian over there at Rockfeed. And, you know, he built that thing from nothing to, you know, he's doing crazy stuff now. And he's still, as far as I know, he's still solo. You know, he doesn't have any crazy backing. He doesn't, you know, he's not affiliated with anybody. He's just a hard worker, put his nose down and put out some great content day after day. And, you know, now he's doing, you know, basically MTV Cribs style stuff on his channel where he's going to, you know, Five Finger Death Punch House and the Tech Nines compound and things like that. So like, he's kind of the dude that, you know, I saw behind me and then all of a sudden, you know, just like, boom, like straight to the stars, man. But he's a good dude. I met him once in real life. And, super nice guy. And anytime I've, you know, had a question for him, or, you know, he'll throw out some kind words my way too. So it's good to have him kind of in the bro category too. But yeah, I mean, not so much in the podcasting world lately, but I mean, a lot of the guitar YouTubers are kind of, you know, calling it quits, and, you know, Nick Nocturnal and those guys are kind of throwing in the towel. And, you know, it gets to a point, I guess, where you just kind of, you know, like, what do you do next? Or you get burnt out, or, you know, what's the next thing? I mean, honestly, even this year, like January, I was talking to my wife about, you know, this will be 10 years of Talk To Me. And I was like, you know what, 10 years, good number, go out on top. And, you know, I'm kind of burnt out. And then I do a podcast with David Ellefson. And after the episode, I was like, hey man, you ever thought about doing your own podcast? And he's like, you know, I've talked about it and blah, blah, blah. And, I kind of pitched him an idea. It's not necessarily what we do now, but I pitched him an idea, and, he's like, man, that sounds awesome. Yeah, let's do that. And he's like, I'm going to NAMM. I'm doing this stuff, the other thing. You know, let's talk when I get back. And as soon as he was done with a couple of things he had to do, you know, I kind of had some graphics together. And, you know, actually it was his idea to bring on guests. Like, I was just going to have a David Ellefson centric podcast, talk about Megadeth history, talk about his history, mm-hmm. talk about what's going on with his life, things like that. And he was the one that wanted to bring on guests. So, it was kind of funny to, you know, how he kind of came from not doing podcasts. He's a great podcast guest, as you know. He'll talk your head off. Yeah. And that's kind of what I told him. I was like, you know, you're a great talker. You have great stories. You know, Blabbermouth picks up every single thing that you do. It's like, why don't you get paid for that? Why don't you keep all that good stuff for yourself? And that was kind of the basis behind the podcast. But yeah, it's been rejuvenating kind of doing that. And I get, you know, kind of like what you're talking about, you know, kind of ending Mars Attacks, going full-time Signals from Mars, just kind of got to mix it up a little bit. You know, you can't just be doing the same thing each and every week for God knows how long we've all been doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually for me, 16 years.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, I've had people, specifically in the last few years, tell me, well, you know, your numbers are down because you don't interview enough people. Yeah. And my whole thing is I want to make sure that this is still fun. So I'm still, you know, talking to people about music. We're doing the, you know, I hit you up for different album countdowns or stuff like that we do to have you vote on stuff. And I get a kick out of all that stuff, because that's kind of the conversations that I had as a kid with all my friends, you know, collecting music and getting into bands and finding out who Megadeth was, who Anthrax was, you know? So to me, it's almost therapeutic as well, where you, no matter how crappy your day is, you're like, all right, but I'm going to talk about, you know, this album tonight, or we're going to talk about current events. And there's this one thing that I really want to talk about, or this band's set list or whatever. And it really kind of keeps things going. And I'm there with you checking out, well, why did they get on Blabbermouth and my interview didn't? Right. So,
or like, you think you have some gold that's just going to break the metal news cycle. But they might pick up something else from the podcast. You're like, why would he pick up that part of the podcast? Like, why are they not focused on the part that I thought was the crazy part? So yeah, it's definitely a crapshoot. If they're going to pick up something from your show, what they pick up, yeah, how crazy it'll go. It was funny. I did, I've been using like Opus clips, you know, kind of getting the clips together and things like that. I think you use something like that too.
Yeah.
But, about a year ago, you run the podcast through it and it spits out, you know, 20 clips. I didn't realize that the guest had said something that was kind of controversial, not, you know, crazy controversial, but it was, was it Phil from All That Remains had said that Korn, like, you know, was it like Korn created deathcore, something weird like that. But like the Opus clips popped it out. I was like, oh shit, I didn't realize he said it like that. And right. So like I took that clip, you know, transcribed it real quick and sent that out, and it like, you know, went everywhere. But it's funny how sometimes you don't even hear the people say the major clip that comes out, you know, because either A, you don't hear it, or B, you're getting ready for the next question, and, you know, like things like that. And even in the edit, you know, because I always go through, I do like one, you know, one quick run through, just to make sure there's nothing crazy going on. And, sometimes you even miss it there. And then, yeah, so sometimes even, so AI will spit it back to you and you're like, no, dummy, you know, there was your gold right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been crazy.
It is, interesting to see what gets picked up.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, I've had several interviews with John Bush over the years. He's been on the show more than anyone else, I think, him and Eric Cooper, probably. And where it's like that, I've got gold. He said he's going to be playing old Anthrax songs. He's going to be getting a band together, doing this, doing that. Nothing. Crickets. It's like,
right.
To me, that's huge news, you know?
Yeah.
But apparently not huge enough. But then there's another time where I interviewed him. I think it was the first time I interviewed him. And there was something that I had transcribed. And I was like, this is it. Boom. This is going to be everywhere. And then what they used was completely different. Right. I'll always remember it was the headline they used was, it made no sense for me to join Metallica. It made all the sense in the world for me to join Anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I get it why they did it, but I would have gone with this other thing. I guess I'm just not, you know, not smart enough in the marketing side of things to pull that type of stuff out. But
well, there's always kind of the running joke of all those metal sites, you know, what it takes to run one of those. And it's like there's Metallica, there's Slipknot, there's Tool. Like, you write a story about any of those three bands, you're going to pay the bills, and everything else is just kind of, you know, chump change when it comes to that. So it's so like I noticed for a long time, if I could get like X member or, you know, this member of a band to say this about Metallica, you're going to get a headline, you know. And then I think there's Mike Z out there. Mike Z rocks the radio station out there. He's in like the Inland Empire. But his final question on every radio interview is like, what's your favorite Metallica album and why? And so you'll see that a lot. It'll be like, you know, Gene Hoglan says that Injustice for All is my favorite, you know, Metallica album. And you know, it's like, he's almost like guaranteed, a blabbermouth headline with every interview he does.
That's smart. And that's funny because I follow various podcasting trend podcasts. Yeah. And that's not the type of thing that they talk about. You know, they talk about getting funding for shows and, you know, how to, you know, a lot of the stuff that they talk about, I don't think applies to what we do, because I think our fans that we go after are so niche that pop stuff doesn't always apply. And when I mean pop, I don't really mean music, but popular culture or what's going on with what makes someone an influencer or whatever. It doesn't necessarily translate to what we're doing. I think about a few months ago, there was a discussion on Facebook, I think it was, where they asked why, or they had questioned that Kiss's I Was Made for Loving You, I think, had surpassed like a billion plays on Spotify. And there were people calling bullshit on that, saying, oh, well, Def Leppard obviously has to have more plays than them because of Pour Some Sugar on Me and this and that. And my response to this was, when all of you people my age, 50 and above, are criticizing them for doing Hello Kitty, Scooby-Doo, being in what movie? The Fall Guy movie was the big one that came out last year, where that song is plastered all over that movie.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they do that stuff. And there's a reason why they're catering to a different audience because of that. Whereas if you look at Def Leppard's audience, and no knock on them, but just kind of facts, people, what percentage of people in their late 40s and up that are music fans,
mm-hmm,
are on Spotify, are on Apple Music, as opposed to still using CDs, some right. even using cassettes still. So it's more of a marketing thing where certain bands are smart enough. Metallica with Stranger Things, for example, getting yeah. Master of Puppets in there to the point where kids are finding out about bands through this stuff. And that's why these bands have millions of streams now, as opposed to other bands that have largely ignored it.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to you a minute ago about going to see Ace last night, and you know, my wife went, and I told her, I was like, you know, Ace Frehley is one of the reasons I play music. Probably right. one of the main reasons I wanted to be a rock star, you know, or try to be a rock star, was I just thought Ace was the coolest thing ever when I was nine, you know, and I had a couple of older cousins that had Kiss records, and they showed, and this is in, you know, late '80s. So, you know, they were already out of makeup, but I got into makeup Kiss as a 9-10 year old, because I thought they were the coolest thing I'd ever seen. I thought Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park was a great movie, you know, like all that stuff. And, you know, because they're larger than life superheroes that also played music. And so, like you're saying, kids now, you know, getting into them with Scooby-Doo and Hello Kitty and all that nonsense. I mean, you know, there's that 9-10 year old kid that's saw them with a Hello Kitty thing, or you know, right. saw them on a cartoon or something. And yeah, so it's generational to kind of keep moving along. I mean, I even, you know, the farewell tour, he was the 4 years old at the time. I took my 4 year old to see it. And as we were, you know, leaving the venue, you know, I was like, what was your favorite part of the show? And he goes, when, and he was good with names already, but he's like, when Gene licked his bass, you know, he pulled it up and he licked up the thing, and he thought it was the coolest thing he'd ever seen. So it's like, you know, that stuff translates, you know. Unfortunately, Pour Some Sugar on Me is not, you know, my kids aren't going to be like, you know, that song's pretty good. You know, they're only going to get into it because of the song and not necessarily how cool Joe Elliott is or something. They're going to get into Kiss because of the theatrics and the looks and the flying and the space and the, you know, fire and all that other nonsense. So yeah, it's, I can see it is wild that, you know, I Was Made for Loving You, it turns out to be one of their biggest songs of all time, but, right. You know, where all hardcores are like, oh, you know, Detroit Rock City or something is way cooler. But yeah, I mean, you know, I Was Made for, it's such a panned song in their career, and they were kind of trend jumping like they tended to do later in the career, but I guess it ended up working.
All these years later. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's the same story, to be honest with you. I was four. My brother had Alive 2, and there's a booklet in there that was called, I think it was called The Evolution of Kiss or something along those lines. Yeah. And I remember opening it to the page that was dedicated to Ace, this big picture of Ace with a smoking guitar. And I was like, what is this? You know, and instantly, boom, I'm podcasting all these years later, thanks to seeing that picture. And, you know, we were in London late last year, and we had to go to these gates where Kiss took pictures at, you know. Oh, so yeah. it was one of these things. So I'm right there with you. The last time I saw Ace was for my honeymoon. We happened to be in LA, and he was playing at the Viper Room. And we're waiting in line to get in the Viper Room. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing Fieldy from Korn walking towards us. This suitcase, because there was Ace's show was the end of the Sunset Strip Music Festival, I think it was called, something along those lines. And it was Korn, and it was Ozzy, and Ace was kind of the closer. Everyone else had played out on the strip, but they were playing, Ace was playing in the club. And so Fieldy comes up to the crowd and says, what's this line for? It's not, it's for Ace Frehley. And he goes, Ace Frehley? Really? Seriously? He just walks to his car, drives off. Monkey comes by like 10 minutes later. I don't know who it was with him, but he had a woman under each of his arms. And someone else, so he was walking with three women, gets into a Suburban.
Good for him.
Or actually, before he gets into the Suburban, says kind of the same thing. It was, you know, who you guys waiting to see? We're like, Ace Frehley's paying out the Viper. Oh, wow, that's cool. That's awesome. You guys are going to have a great time. And, yeah, you know, he high-fived a few people, signed a few things, got in the Suburban and left. And that show actually, Slash got up on stage with him and played Colgin. And George Lopez, the comedian, actually introed the show. So
right,
nice. It was neat. It was a neat experience.
Probably much better than what we saw last night. So David and I had had Rudy Sarzo on the podcast a couple of days ago for the Back to the Beginning, kind of recap. We had him and Mike Borden on together. Dream team of lineup right there. And if you if you listen to the podcast, which I honestly, in the 10 years of podcasting, that's going to be top five interview of all time. I don't think Mike Borden and Rudy Sarzo have ever really talked about their individual time in Aussie. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much time they've spent around each other. So like, and the only pushback on the episode was Mike does cut people off a little bit, but Mike had a lot of questions for Rudy. So honestly, it's funny. At one point, me and David are just sitting back kind of listening as Mike is kind of interviewing Rudy. But Rudy, obviously, in Quiet Riot opened for Ace Frehley last night. So I got a nice little hookup. Rudy Sarzo, I think, was 74 years old. Fucking, if I'm half as cool as that at 74, like, sign me up now. Because, he came out there. They opened the show. He came out there. I don't think he stopped moving the entire time he was out there. He was playing the bass on his head, playing the bass up from under here, playing the bass over the neck. I mean, he was doing things that I've never seen anybody do with a bass guitar. And obviously, being a bass player, that's a huge thing to see somebody doing something I've never seen before, man. But I mean, he was rocking the whole time. They do a little bit of a Crazy Train. Johnny Kelly plays drums for them, so they do a little bit of a Black Number One and a little part. So it was kind of cool to kind of see that little shout out to Typo Negative Two. But so Rudy comes out there and just crushes. Slaughter was up next. And, you know, I know two Slaughter songs. Like, I just was never a Slaughter fan. So, right. I mean, they did like a 20-minute version of Fly to the Angels, was fine. You know, and then they did whatever the other. Up All Night Sleep. But yeah, whatever it's called. I mean, those two songs crush. I mean, honestly, they were. Mark Slaughter still got it. You know, Dana Strum up there, you know, kicking ass. And I know they've still got that Zoltan drummer guy just a showman. So, I mean, it was all in all, Slaughter put on a hell of a show for a band that I'm not too familiar with of that era band. And I feel so bad for Ace's band because, you know, Jeremy and the other guy, that's kind of been around the Nashville scene for a long time. Always been staples of the Nashville Rock and Pod. They did the Rock and Roll Residency in Nashville. They got picked up as Gene's band years ago, and then now they're Ace's band. And, you know, they're hell of musicians. Seem to be great dudes. And they start the first song of the set last night. And for about 20 seconds, I was super pumped to see Ace Frehley. I've seen him live a few times. I even joked kind of going into the show. I'm like, oh, here we go to see Ace kind of fuck up Kiss songs. But I said that tongue in cheek, thinking that, you know, I mean, I know he's not 100% when it comes to guitar playing these days, but he's still good and it's still fun to hear those songs. But man, he comes out, he like stumbles to the mic. He's like, he's just kind of just strumming around on the guitar. And it was, even my wife, who's not a Kiss fan, she just loves music. She was even like, something's not right here. You know, she knew something wasn't right. And he was slurring his words and he was off a little bit. They did, you know, one of my favorite Ace songs of all time is Rock Soldiers. Mm-hmm. And I did a silly song or whatever, but he just came up and he was kind of, which I guess he does on the recording, he kind of just talks the verses, mm-hmm. but he was off. He was like a beat behind and the band was like trying to save it. I think we lasted four or five songs and I was just like, I don't want this to be the lasting memory of Ace Frehley for me.
Because
he came out, he was trying to do the cool Ace moves and stuff, and he was just a little bit off. And they would, the, you know, the sound guy would crank his guitar on guitar solos too. It was like, it was normal. And then you knew Ace's guitar solo was coming. So they would crank it up. And honestly, it sounded like someone picking up a guitar that doesn't know how to play guitar and like act like their guitar solo, you know, like they're soloing, you know, where they just like, you know, they're doing that nonsense. I was blown away about how bad he's gotten. I'm like, and I'm typically not like somebody needs to get him off the road. You know, somebody needs to sit him down. But yeah, I think really someone should stop Ace and be like, you got to stop this. Like, get yourself some help, have the redemption tour, you know, sober up. Because I mean, his head was down. He had sunglasses on. It was 10:30 at night. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, the wig's looking rough. I mean, it was just sad to see. And you hate to see your heroes go out like that, especially after you see Rudy Sarzo up there crushing Slaughter, Mark Slaughter and all those guys up there just killing it. And then Ace comes out, just shits the bed. But the thing is, you know, we all the way back to what we were talking about earlier with Kiss and their fans and the, you know, the merchandising and everything else. Merch line was as long as you could see. Once it died down, we walked over there to kind of see what was going on. All the shirts were $50 each, $50 t-shirts.
Wow.
Everybody walking around with two or three of them on their shoulder, you know, a $500 VIP meet and greet, which I don't know what that gets you. And, you know, it's a small outdoor amphitheater, probably holds a few thousand. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people were there. Probably a little bit under 1,000, maybe 500 to 700. I don't know. But everybody had a shirt, everybody had something. Like, it wasn't, so I mean, what's Ace's reason to get off tour? It's like, if people are going to spend that kind of money,
yeah.
And I bet if you look online at the groups and stuff today, 95% of the Kiss fans be like, oh man, he crushed last night. Ace was so good, man. Keep rocking, bro, you know, all that stuff. So he doesn't really have any need to get off the road and to get himself clean. But there was a row of like dudes in front of us, and they were all wearing their Ace solo shirts and Freely's Comet shirts. And like, you could tell, like, they were bummed. Like, everybody was just bummed around me. Like,
right.
Except for like the drunk guy behind me. He was like, woo, you know, but like, for the most part, everybody was just bummed last night. So I can't wait to see. I know Mike, you know, from Voltage Junkie was there last night. And he took some video and stuff. So hopefully we'll start seeing that stuff roll out on Instagram and stuff, because I mean, in all honesty, I would love to see some footage and be wrong, you know, be like, oh, well, maybe I was just in the bad spot of the venue, right, or something. You know, maybe I was just wrong. You know, maybe Ace crushed last night and I was just in a weird vantage point. But yeah, we stayed for, you know, four or five songs. And you know, my wife had to work this morning, so I was just like, yeah, let's just get out of here. You got to get some sleep. This is silly.
Yeah, that sucks, though. I mean, it wasn't the last time. The first time I saw Kiss live, actually, was on the 2000, what was that, the Farewell to Peter and Ace tour.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Basically. And I'm glad I got to see them with, and I'm going to catch heat for this, but I'm glad I got to see them with Tommy and with Eric years later, because growing up and, you know, being a huge fan of Peter's playing and of the band, you know, you get to see one of your heroes live. And when you see they just can't do it anymore, you're like,
yeah,
I don't, what you said, I don't want this to be my last memory of this band.
Right.
You know,
yeah, so. It was the first time I saw Kiss was 97 on the reunion tour in Nashville. Actually, Chris Sinzak in attendance, too. We didn't know each other at the time. We actually were both at the, I think it's like 95, 30 years ago, we were at the Bad Boys of Kiss tour.
Okay.
At a small club. It was, you know, where Peter opened for Ace.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, pigging shit back then seeing that. You know, I had tears in my eyes when I saw the reunion tour. I never thought I would see that. You know, like I said, growing up in the late 80s, being a big fan of the makeup era, you know, just thinking that that was a time of, you know, time gone by, we would never see again. So being able to go to a venue and see, you know, Kiss up there, full makeup, amps everywhere. I think they were still, it was still pretty fresh in the reunion. So I'm pretty sure they were still playing well. But yeah, so I saw them then, and then I saw them, I guess on the, yeah, I guess the only other time I saw them was the Act of the Farewell Tour or whatever, a couple of years ago.
Right.
I've seen Ace a couple of times solo because I, like I said, Ace was always my favorite member. Mm-hmm. You know, probably Ace followed by Gene, probably. Right. I like Ace's voice. I think he has a cool singing voice. You know, he was cracking some jokes last night. You know, he was trying to crack some jokes, but he was still slurred his speech a little bit. You know, he's like, oh, they put me up in the presidential suite. And, you know, we're here in Louisville, Kentucky, you know, Churchill Downs and the horses and all that nonsense. He's like, every photo in this place is a horse. He kept saying a horse, you know, with the strong, you know, Brooklyn accent. Horses everywhere. I want to see a horse. But yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just, when I saw him in like 2016, I thought he was pretty good. The band, and this was a different band at the time with him, but I thought they were pretty good. But yeah, last night I was just like, oof, man, Ace, get it together, bud.
Yeah, that's a constant behind the scenes comment with Sinzak and myself is, as the years have gone by with Ace, the over enunciation
right
of his words. So yeah.
Plus. Yeah.
Plus. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you know, I'll catch flack from this from your from people that watch you guys. But I mean, it's just like the Back to the Beginning Black Sabbath thing. Bill Ward was rough. He was rough, you know, and I get that he's, you know, older and, but man, the tempos were so slow and he was missing fills. And I'm just like, did he even practice for this? Or did he just get up there and think he was going to play some of these songs off muscle memory, you know, from 40 years ago?
I unfortunately was in the middle of an 18-hour workday.
Yeah.
So I have not, I mean, I've watched clips online. It was breaking my heart during lunch. I'm looking at my phone and there's a Facebook group with some of my, that some of my patrons have. And they're, oh, wow. Anthrax is playing Into the Void. It's Jake and Nuno and this and that. And I'm like, I'm missing out on all of this. It was going through my head. And then one of the other coaches at the camp that I was at 2 days later is like, hey, did you see the Back to the Beginning thing? I'm like, I was here working 18 hours with you. I'm like, right. When am I going to have time? Well, have you seen it since? I'm like, it was only available till Monday. I'm like, we're here for 10 straight days. When am I going to see this? So I'm hoping that they release that on DVD or something in the future. Yeah. I mean, based on what David Ellison was saying during the podcast, he's saying that they shot a lot of behind the scenes stuff as well. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff like with Sid Wilson proposing to Kelly and some of the other stuff. I mean, I'm assuming that'll be released in similar deal, go to charity. Yeah. But who knows? None of the Taylor Hawkins stuff was released. And I was thinking that would have come out on DVD at some point, but doesn't look like that's ever going to happen.
I think the bad part of it, I think, was Black Sabbath playing after Ozzy solo. Okay. Because Ozzy solo, you know, Zach's up there crushing, Mike Hanez is crushing, drummer is blowing the doors off everybody. Yeah. You know, this is Ozzy fresh. He's doing, you know, Mama, I'm Coming Home, not a dry eye in the building. You know, I'm watching at home, like tears in my eyes. Like this is, cause you could just tell Ozzy he wanted to get out of that chair so bad. And like, and he even says something like, you know, I've been laid up for 6 years. So, I mean, can you imagine being basically bedridden for 6 years? Then all of a sudden you're, you know, in a soccer stadium playing in front of, 40,000-50,000 people.
Right.
I mean, he was on fire, and then kind of the set change, and I don't know, man. I honestly, maybe if Black Sabbath would have played before Ozzy, which would have been blasphemy, maybe it would have left a better taste in my mouth. But yeah, it was like the tempos were so slow with Black Sabbath, and it was cool to see those four guys on stage. Don't get me wrong, but man, you could just see it in like Tony and Geezer's faces that they were not having a good time. They were just like, let's pick it up, Bill. You know, and being in bands with over the years, and not to name names of anybody, but you know, there are certain drummers or certain people you play with that it might suck to be stuck with them for 50 years, you know, that I know Bill was great back in the day, and don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying like over the years, maybe they lose a step or whatnot. And so like the classic lineup of your band isn't maybe the best lineup of your band. How about that?
Right.
So it's just to have to get up there with your boys, and one of them's not pulling his weight. I guess figuratively, not literally, because once he pulls that shirt off, you're like, whoa, Bill. He's just up there just not giving a shit, you know, like ripping the shirt off at almost 80 years old with just like, he's like, but it was cool to see him. Glad they did it. You know, I'm not going to hate on that, but yeah, it was just sad to watch. Not as sad as Guns N' Roses, though. Axl's. The Guns N' Roses performance of that probably took the cake of like, please don't ever do that again.
Well, I think you got to give them credit for some of the songs that they pulled out.
No, I give you that, but it's still, his voice is just shot, like beyond shot.
But that gets back to the whole, both Axl and both Bill get back to the Ace comment that you made a few minutes ago, where you're still going to have people online that will still argue that they're still great. They're still awesome. They're still, and it's, I get it. They're, you know, they're reliving the best years of their life, seeing them, you know, in concert. They're like Al Bundy reliving all those touchdowns. Right. But at the same time, man, it is rough, and Guns N' Roses is still selling a lot of tickets.
Yeah. You know,
there was a social media clip that I posted. A clip that was posted recently that I responded to earlier today, which had to do with the fact that people were criticizing Metallica for screwing up the beginning of a song. And someone said, well, this is what they get for changing their set list every night. And I was pissed. I was like, are you serious? I'm like, you would rather see a band play the same set list night after night after night, whereas if they're playing something different, it may give you an excuse to see them, you know, several nights on that tour, because you're going to find, you know, you're going to see something completely different. And we've become so fickle with the internet, where again, it gives us a voice to be podcasters, but it also gives a lot of people that shouldn't have a voice out there the platform to rattle off dumb stuff like that.
Yeah, I've seen those lately of you know, where they kind of play the bridge to Master of Puppets a little wonky, or, you know, I mean, even back in the, there's a clip I saw the other day of where James is like, what about, you know, it's time for Master of Puppets. And he just like, he goes chomp, 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 chomp by himself. And like Lars picks up the set list, walks over to him, and kind of as a joking thing points out that he's supposed to be playing Whiplash, but it just shows that they're human and they're not on a, you know, they're obviously not on a click. They're not on tracks. They're not on everything else. So, I mean, I think I would rather see that than over, you know, I mean, honestly, they could easily put part of Lars, you know, you've seen it. You've seen those videos of like, I've seen it all the way down to where drums are on tracks. You know, you see the drummer back there hitting stuff and he's like, wait a minute, he just hit a crash. You hear a crash, but he didn't hear, you know, hit a crash, or, you know, he's doing something crazy with the double kick. You know, they could easily put, you know, Lars's double kicks on tracks and things like that, you know, just to kind of mask some of the stuff. But they don't, you know, they're human and they're playing the songs the way that they can at 60 year old dudes. And so, you know, part of it's commendable. Part of it's like, you know, like we're seeing, you know, you and I are seeing a generation of bands that that, you know, like Slayer and Anthrax and Metallica, Megadeth, all the thrash bands are putting out some of their greatest material now because of technology and the way that they can record these days. I mean, some of the later Testament records just sound amazing. You know, the last few Megadeth records sound awesome. You know, the last Metallica album, you know, it's like the technology is caught up to the music to where you can get everything tight, make everything sound good. You know, because some of those early thrash records, as much as we all love them, they sound like garbage, you know, like they're like really rough sounding. And so now that they can kind of get in there and fine tune everything, they're putting out some of their greatest material, but we're also seeing a generation, you know, you watch that Back to the Beginning thing, you're seeing old James Hetfield and old Joey Belladonna and old Scotty Ian, and, you know, just everybody's getting older, but they're still held to the standard of, you know, 1988 James Hetfield and Justice for All tour. And, you know, they're headbanging and rocking and doing this, that, and the other thing and sweating and everything else. Because, you know, when you and I were growing up and we're seeing, like, you know, Herman's Hermits at the fair, you know, they're up there just standing still, singing the thing and not having to do much, or whatever version of the Temptations was coming to the, you know, coming to the state fair, things like that. You know, you like the generation before us, their old guard could get away with standing there, the mamas and the papas and, you know, Jefferson Airplane or whatever was that, you know, coming through. You know, they didn't have to put on a energetic, crazy show where sweating and blah, 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 you know, everything going on. So our heroes, you know, we're watching thrash metal get old, you know, like old, you know, like grandpas and stuff. And it's fun to watch. You know, sometimes you're like, you know, sometimes I'll see a photo of James Hetfield and I'm like, man, he is looking old. Like, you know, you never think your heroes are going to get old, and then they do. It's just wild.
Yeah. I did a show on Friday where we talked about the Back to the Beginning show with two people that watched the entire thing.
Yeah. And
one of the things they brought up was that Metallica had played, Guns N' Roses played Junior's Eyes. It's the song after that.
Johnny Blade.
Yeah. And I love the original. So I was like, I got to search this out. You know, these guys are telling me that this was great. And I find it on YouTube. I push play and my wife says, man, James Hetfield looks old.
Yeah.
So it's what I said to her. I go, well, they are in their 60s. You know, this guy's like at least 15 years older than me. I'm like, not too bad considering all the shit that they've done. And, you know, they could be in a lot worse shape. So I'm probably more lenient than I should be with them because of, you know, how they've always kind of come across as being human to me. I mean, Live Shit, Binge and Purge, they have mistakes in that they never corrected. Their live Metallica stuff, it's boom, out in 2 days and works and all. And I think that's part of the reason why they're essentially the biggest metal band of all time, because they've kind of followed a tradition of Sabbath and AC/DC to the point of really emotionally connecting with working class people and showing that they're human and showing that, you know, they go through the same shit that we do. And I think that's endeared them to so many people. So yeah, is Lars playing, you know, Injustice for All note for note like he did back right. on the, you know, Monsters of Rock tour? No, absolutely not. But just like you said before, I have a vinyl album behind me. I'm not going to point to which, but I saw them and the drummer that was playing was not playing live. And there were parts of certain songs where it's heavy into double bass and those drum heads were not moving. So for as much as people say, no, he was playing with a trigger. Like, yeah, you don't get how triggers work then. So that was,
I mean, It's funny, you know, and I've started to see like bands all the way down to like local bands in the clubs, you know, opening for nationals coming through that are running tracks and stuff. And I'm just like, get up there and just play. Like, we, you know, yeah. I mean, there are certain bands, certain things that I'll let slide. You know, if you've got a crazy instrumental part, or you've got a crazy, you know, dubstep part, or you know, anything like that, throw that on a track, I'm fine with it. You know, but if there's someone on stage that can play the part, let them play the part.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been 10 years ago. I was one of the first times I ever saw a touring band come through and they did a quick line check, you know, as they were getting ready. I was like, all right, left stage guitar, jump, right stage guitar, jump, jump, you know, drums, bass. And someone hit a space bar and the bass track played. And I was like, oh, we're already at that point. You know, like, so, yeah. So it's, you know, it's just like, let, you know, if you can do it live, do it live. But if, you know, like I said, if it's a crazy orchestral part, yeah, throw it on a track. That's never bothered me. I saw Fear Factory in 1998 and, you know, they had a dude over there. There was like on Edge Crusher where there's all the scratching and stuff, you know, homeboy just hit a key, you know, hit a key on the keyboard and it, you know, it played the sample, you know, I'm fine with that stuff.
But yeah.
Just play as much as you can, as you know, as live as you can. How about that?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Circling things back to Talk To Me and the show that you're doing with Ellefson. There've been several iterations of podcasts that you've done and different things that you've done over the years, whether it was Knotfest, whether it was the show that you had done with Ian as well. And you've tried other things over the years. How important have all of those evolutions been to you to help you progress as a podcaster?
I mean, I think it just kind of shows you like what works, what doesn't work. You know, every day is a learning lesson. You know, I mean, the show with Ian was fun. I love Ian to death. You know, I always consider him a bro. You know, I did some stuff with Chris Aiken. You know, and it's funny when I listen to the Classic Metal show and you hear Neely every once in a while kind of throw jabs that, oh, well, nobody else can find a co-host, so they have to get Chris Aiken. And I always want to be like, you know what, when I asked Chris to come on the podcast, that was right after his scare with COVID. That was right after I honestly thought we were going to lose him. You know, I was literally, you know, he was in the hospital. He's got bad lungs from the burn accident. You know, he's like a 400-pound dude. Like he was everything that you thought was going to kill him. You know, mm-hmm. he got COVID. He has bad lungs. He's overweight. He's out, you know, he's unhealthy. Like everything that was at the time going to kill him should have killed him. And it didn't. And I remember, you know, and I'm not too ashamed to say this, but I remember the day that he posted that he was, you know, he was released from the hospital. He's going to be okay. And I was in my car and I pulled over and just cried. Like I literally like, you know, and it was crazy. It's like even with you, Victor, I've never met Chris in person, but like, you know, Chris is one of those dudes where I can call him and we would talk for an hour. We always had a great rapport. And I had been talking to Knotfest about bringing a co-host in anyway. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to ask Chris because, you know, that's how much I thought of him and that's how much he meant to me and still does. You know, I still talk to him all the time. Even last night, I'm texting him while he's on, you know, on air doing the Classic Metal show. You know, we're bullshitting back and forth about Slaughter and all this other nonsense on stage. But, so having him come on the show, you know, Mike years ago, John Drake over the, you know, popped on for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Part of me is like, I was an only child. So I think like, I don't play well with others, you know, if that makes any sense, it's just like, you know, but with David, obviously David's the name on the show, you know, it's his show. And it does go back all the way back to, you know, Adam Carolla's old thing. Like, how do you become successful in podcasting? Step one, be famous, you know, because I mean, obviously right out the gate, you know, Ellefson's podcast's numbers are doing well. And the announcement of the show went pretty big. And, you know, everybody's like, who the hell is this other guy? You know, those comments are my favorite. Like, who's the guy? You know, sometimes I wear my glasses on the show. It's like, who's the guy with the glasses and the beard? You know, I made a comment about Lars one day that honestly, I don't think it was a negative comment, but everybody thought I was being negative. Like, well, who is he to say that about Lars and, you know, all this shit. And it's funny. Like, so no matter how much you do in podcasting, like there's still a giant segment out there that has no idea who you are.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of the comments early on, cause David's such a talker and some of these people, like, I get it. I'm like, why am I here? Like, there's a lot of times where I'm like, I don't need to be here. Like, I should just X out my box and just watch the show like a fan, you know, cause if you get David and Frank Bello together or David and Dave Lombardo together, or even, you know, Gary Holt and the other day with the back to the beginning stuff, all that stuff, like I wasn't there for. Those guys have known each other for 40 years. So they're just going to banter back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I think we interviewed Maria Ferrara, you know, Metal Maria. And I'm sure you've dealt with her many a time with her PR company. You know, it was like 20 minutes into the episode and I lean in. I'm like, all right, Maria, it's been about 20 minutes. It's time for me to chime in, you know, as a joke. Because a lot of times I see it too. You know, where I'm just listening. I'm just watching because I'm a fan of podcasts and I'm a fan of David. I'm a fan of, you know, 90% of the people that we've interviewed. So, I mean, I'm listening too. So like I'll catch it to where I'll like these long stretches of time where I don't say a word just because I'm listening. You know, I've always been a listener too, when it comes to interviewing people. And so I'm kind of waiting for my spot to jump in, but yeah, it's been fun. But yeah, just learning, growing, seeing how everything works. I've been more impressed with how into podcasting David's become. Mm-hmm. Like he's like, we should do this. We should do that. We should get this guest. We should do that. Do you have this time? He's been in basically in Germany all year or all summer. So it's like, you know, he's been working around like my days off from work. And like, you know, coordinating, you know, cause they're what, like 6 hours ahead of me and all that nonsense. So, you know, like you are. And then, so it's like, it's just been fun to kind of see his evolution and getting into comfortable interviewing people. You know, he said even early on, cause I mean, some of the early on episodes, he does talk a lot. Mm-hmm. And maybe he doesn't let the guests talk as much. So he's trying to curtail that. And he goes, you know, that dude's been being interviewed since he was 18 years old. You know, he joined Megadeth. And, you know, they started Megadeth when he was 18. He's been famous his whole life. So now he's trying to like turn it around and become the interviewer instead of the interviewee. So yeah, it's been a fun evolution to watch that too and watch him do everything. But just, you know, just over the years, like, you know, we were joking earlier about the technology and Skype and all this other stuff, you know, like, so learning how to do stuff with Chris Aiken through you know, Restreams and StreamYard and all the different evolutions in technology, things like that, you know, kind of everything kind of builds up to, you know, what you're doing today. Mm-hmm. And it kind of works out to where, you know, oh, I had to learn how to do this one thing in editing. So now I know how to do it all the time. And, you know, you just kind of have, you know, I don't necessarily sit there and watch Adobe Premiere Pro tutorials to learn how to do everything. But when I have to figure something out, that's when you go to YouTube and try to figure it all out. And, you know, that helps you kind of, you know, in your day to day podcasting life. So I don't know, man, it's just an evolution of learning how to work with people and how to, you know, deal with different personalities and how to, you know, schedules and things like that. That was the biggest thing, honestly. The biggest thing with everybody was just schedule conflicts. And that was the one thing about Chris Aiken, him working from home. He was kind of free to do it whenever. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the other ones, it was like, oh, I can't do it this day because I have this. And even like when I did New Pod with Ro Coley, you know, Ro lives in Los Angeles. He's in with every band ever. And I'd be like, hey, Ro, can we record on Tuesday? He'd be like, oh, I'm going to see Lacuna Coil that day. All right, what about Wednesday? Oh, man, Cole Chambers reuniting, blah, blah, blah. I gotta go. All right, what about Thursday? Oh, man, Thursday, I've got to go. You know, it was just, he was going to like two or three shows a night every other day. So, it was, you know, that was the only, that was the biggest, you know, hurdle with doing a show with him. Because he runs a business that he needs to be out and talking to people and you know, talking to band members and things like that to get more business. So I get it. So yeah, it was tough. It was like, all right, I've got he was always like, all right, I can do it from like 4 to 5, but I might have to do it from my car, you know, shit like that. but yeah, it's just been fun, man. I think everything's been fun. You know, I don't think I've, you know, no, none of these shows have ended with a blow up fight, you know, like, ah, oh, I hate you. You know, shit like right. that. It's always like, so it seems to be cordial. Well, at least I hope so, you know, with everybody.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. With Allison, has there been kind of a fly on the wall moment where you're hearing people banter back and forth with him and something has come up that's really kind of caught you off guard and been eye opening?
I mean, there's been a few things. I don't necessarily know how eye opening things are, but it just, some of it goes to show you how we're all in, you know, he always says that we're all in the same band. We're all, you know, no matter how, you know, no matter if you were in Megadeth or you were in the local band down the street, it's all band dynamics. It's all, you know, nothing ever changes. It's like this guy hates that. This guy snores funny. This guy ate my cereal one day, so I'm still mad at him for that. It was kind of cool. Kind of puts it into perspective in the Dave Lombardo episode where he talks about going over to Kerry King's house and Kerry's making the spiked bracelet, you know, the big spiked armband or whatever. And you know, he's like his dad's sitting there reading a book, his mom's, you know, cooking something in the kitchen, and Kerry's in the living room floor, you know, adding spikes to a leather thing. You know, you hear those kind of stories or with Dave, he's like, with Dave Lombardo, he said, you know, he went to some of those early Slayer rehearsals and David brought up like they had Scorpions posters on their walls and you see Dave Lombardo's face kind of light up like, oh yeah, that was our first practice. You know, they go back to being just teenagers and kids before the fame. And that stuff. So those are the fun moments, you know, where you get to hear those kind of firsthand stories of young, you know, Lombardo or young Metallica or young Megadeth, things like that. You know, those are the things that intrigue me because I got into Kiss at 9, 10 years old. You know, Metallica when I was 10, 11 years old, and you know, Metallica opens up the world to Megadeth, Slayer, Anthrax, all that stuff, and so. You know, that was like the peak fandom of some of those bands. Cause you know, once you get into, you know, when I started playing music and playing out and the other bands that were around at the time, you know, I'm not, you know, I never got to the heights of some of these bands, but they were technically my peers, you know, they were the bands out at the same time, you know, the Korns, the Deftones, the Cold Chambers, all those bands were just kind of bands at the same time as I was trying to make it in music. So like they were the competition rather than the fan, you know, my fandom being as big as it is for some of those thrash metal bands or even some of the, you know, the early death metal bands, the Obituaries and Morbid Angels and things like that. So yeah. So some of the guys we have on when I'm hearing David talk to them about back in the early days, back in the Bay Area days, back, all that stuff. That's when I'm just like, the happiest I've ever been on some of these, you know, podcasts where I'm sitting there just listening to, you know, the first episode we did was Frank Bello from Anthrax and David Frank had just put out like a signature series bass through Spectre. So David's like, hey man, why don't you pull the bass out and, you know, kind of show it off. And as Frank Bello pulls out the bass, David picks up one of his basses and he asks Frank to show him the riff for Room for One More, I think. And so, you know, Frank's playing it and then David starts to play it And I was like, well, shit. And I grabbed my bass and I'm like, I start playing it. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, Frank Bello is currently teaching David Ellefson how to play an Anthrax song. And I'm also learning at the same time, like, what world am I living in right now? How did any of this happen? You know? Or like even the other day with the four squares on the screen, it's David, it's Mike from, you know, Mike Borden from Faith No More, Ozzy, Rudy Sarzo, and then me. I'm like, why? What life is this? What is life at this point?
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I've haven't been to those heights, but at times where, you know, I've gotten to share things with other people or people, it's like, how'd I get here? Why? You know, right. It's one of those things where really, you know, my 17-year-old self would be calling bullshit. Yeah. I'd be talking to this person right now.
You know, the biggest thing from the podcast is just David and I's friendship. Like, you know, right. He'll text me, you know, we're the live stream from the Back to the Beginning was on a 2-hour delay.
Mm-hmm.
He texted me that he had a good show before the live stream had even gotten to us.
Oh, wow.
So like he played in front of all those people because, I just anytime he has a show or he's doing something, I'll hit him. Hey, man, have a good show today. Good luck. You know, break a leg, all that, whatever.
Yeah.
So I hit him up early in the day. I'm like, hey, man, you know, crush it tonight. Ball. He's like, thanks. And then, before the live stream even happened over here, I get a text. Hey, man, it was awesome. You know, he don't have to do that. You know, like,
he's
David Ellefson, but he's still like, it's still just cool that he, you know, wanted to let me know how the show went. And then I had some questions about him, you know, because I think we were going to talk about the Primer 55 thing, but I had a couple of questions about that for him the other day. And we had like a long heartfelt talk, you know, like he was kind of laying out some stuff and, you know, what he thinks I should do with this, what he thinks I should do with that. And I'm just like, I get off the phone and I'm like, I just talked to David Ellefson
right.
about my life and what some decisions that I should make with music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I met David when I was 15. They were on the Euthanasia tour. They had it was a Megadeth canned food drive. And if you donated 10 pounds of food to the local food bank, you got a special backstage pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, me and a buddy of mine did it. We go down. I mean, it was kind of a cattle call. We were in the arena, seats all lined up in one row. And then Megadeth was in the row ahead of us, turned around, you know, kind of coming through signing everything. And right. That would have been the first time I met David in January of 95. To tell that kid that in 30 years, you're going to be like having a life conversation
right.
with David Ellefson about, you know, your music career. And it's just like, what's going on? None of this makes any sense.
Right.
Yeah.
I've had people tell me, well, you have my number now, hit me up whenever you want. And I'm like, love your music, love talking to you, but I'm not going right. to be hitting you up and saying, hey, did you check out the, you know, the Dodgers game last night?
Right.
You know, so it's cool that you actually, you know, you've got some common ground there and you're at a place where you have a friendship with him where you can do that sort of stuff. You know, I just feel weird and out of place doing something like that.
Oh yeah. Like there, yeah, you definitely get those numbers and you're like, you know, like, hey, you know, I've got some crazy numbers in my phone the years from interviewing people when they're like, hey, give me a call on this, blah, blah, or text me on that, you know, something like that. And I would never call them. I would never text them. I would never do anything unless you were like really, you know, because sometimes you'll have these interviews and I'll get off an interview and I'll go upstairs and I'll talk to my wife and she's always like, how'd it go? And I'm like, oh, I have a new best friend, you know, because sometimes you get off these interviews and you really click with people. And if you have a common ground, that's not like, hey man, you know, I loved this lick on an album. But if you had common ground, both liked a certain football team, or you knew that they liked a certain football team and you want to razz them a little bit, you know, any of that stuff. I get, but there are a few people like, hey, if they put out a new song, I might hit them a text like, hey man, loving the new track, you know, just kind of giving them something positive. But I don't ever expect like a bro down. And I was even talking to Mike from Voltage Junkie last night about that. Was, you know, sometimes you'll get tickets to a show and they'll throw in a backstage pass. And I'm like, I don't even want to go back and bother anybody. Like, you know, 15-year-old me would have been back in the middle of everything, you know, rummaging through the catering, you know, talking to everybody and whatnot. But you know, the older I get, the more like in the way I feel. And like even the other day, my wife and I went to see Incubus and we had like an after show pass. And but it was like it was one of those deals where you had to get like a certain person to walk you back. And so we were like waiting for that certain person to walk them back. But then they had an emergency, so they had to leave the venue. But we didn't know. So we were just like standing there in the way of everybody trying to, you know, all the trucks come in to move the stage and everything else. And I'm like, let's just go. Like, I didn't realize that I was waiting for a certain person and they didn't come. And I'm like, I'm not going to do this. Like, let's just get out of here. Yeah. It's just too much at this point. But it's, you know, last night at the Ace Frehley show, David's like, make sure you go say hi to Rudy. And I'm like, I don't want to bother Rudy Sarzo, you know, but I'd have been back there just being a fanboy, seeing Johnny Kelly from Typo and be like, man, I saw you back in 1994 with Pantera, you know, you'd be in that guy, you know, but it's just. Yeah, the older I get, the less inclined I am to go bother people, especially backstage.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. It's funny because that Ace show that I mentioned with that Slash and George Lopez were there. My wife's like, let's go over, let's go meet him. I'm like, leave him alone. You know, enjoy the show. They're at a booth. They're watching Ace like we are. Just, you know, it seems like they're chilling and no one's bugging them. Let's not.
Yeah,
ones to go bug them. So I get it.
Yeah. I mean, there, you know, a few people I might want, you know, maybe if Hetfield was out there, I might wander over and, hey, man, I'm really sorry. Can I grab a quick photo? Like, just give me the photo and I'll get out of your face, you know, that type of stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, luckily when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, my friend Jeremy Owsley and myself would go and just, you know, chase down buses and stand behind the venue for 8 hours and, you know, just any of that stuff to get a glimpse of our heroes and talk to them, maybe get a second. And honestly, that might've been like some of the early inklings that I was going to get into podcasting. Obviously that was before podcasting even existed, but I always try to think of one question for the person that was maybe a little bit left of center, that it wasn't just, oh my God, I loved your new album. You know, like I might try to ask him something. I actually met Mike Borden in 1997. And he was kind of coming down. It was a Faith No More show. After the show, he kind of came to the, where all the fans were and kind of did a quick, you know, run through. And he was like, sign, boom, sign, walk away. And when he got to me, I looked at him and I, for some reason, I looked at him, I go, there's something I've always wanted to ask you. And he stopped and he looked at me and honestly, I forgot. And I couldn't think of it, like the top of my head. I was like thinking, and then all of a sudden I go, Cliff Burton, because he grew, you know, him, Mike Borden, yeah. Cliff Burton grew up together. Mm-hmm. And dude, Mike stopped in his tracks and just talked Cliff Burton with me for 10 minutes. You know, that was his, you know, his best friend growing up kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I always tried to not just be like, oh man, Epic's a great song or something. You know, you gotta hit them with something that'll make them stop in their tracks. But I'll never, that's one thing. And honestly, I didn't even get a chance to tell him that on the interview the other day, but that's always been one of the cooler looking back on my life moments is when, you know, Mike Borden stops in his tracks to tell you about his friend growing up, Cliff Burton, which I mean, you have friends like that, I'm sure. You know, you grew up with somebody, and if they would have became a successful musician and passed away and all that stuff, like, you know, he's not, to you, he's not Cliff Burton. He's your best friend, Cliff Burton. And I think that there are a few people in my life, if they would have passed away at a younger age and someone asked me about them later in life, I would love to talk about my friends growing up, you know? So that was very cool of him to do that. And it was super cool of him to do the podcast of the day, because other than the Dean Del Rey podcast that he did a few months ago, I've never really seen Mike Borden on a podcast, you know? Just sort of get, and he was great. Like, I don't, you know, whenever you get a chance to listen to that, like even Senzak texted me. He was like, Mike Borden should have his own podcast because how well he spoke on it and he had great stories and all that stuff. You know, but it was fun.
You're gonna have to start the Toomey Podcasting Network.
Just get all the famous people in there.
Yeah. That's funny though. That's the one thing where before seeing a show, you've got two things that come to mind. All right. Can you jump up on stage and play with them if they need are you going to ask somebody if you run into them so that you can engage them? So yeah, Cliff Burton, that's cool.
Yeah, no, it's always been fun, man. But yeah, that we made it more of a game, almost like a hide and seek game, you know, like, and luckily he was a guy that had, you know, he had like one of those long, like 110 cameras or whatever they were back in the day with the weird film in it and stuff like that. And he carried a camera with us everywhere we went. And so like, luckily I have photos with me and Dimebag when I was 15 and and Bobby Blitz and, you know, like all I have a bunch of photos of me. And honestly, I think that's the only photos I have of me of that era because, you know, I was living with my dad. He was a single dad making no money. We weren't going to take photos all the time. You know, we didn't have a camera running around or a video camera or anything like that. So like any photo of basically of me around the ages of like 14 to 17 are me and rock stars because my buddy Jeremy happened to have a camera, luckily. So,
wow. You mentioned Primer a second ago. So how did this whole reunion come about?
Honestly, it's been building for a long time. We had talked about maybe doing the 20th anniversary of Introduction to Mayhem back in 2020, but then obviously something happened back then that stopped everybody in their tracks from doing anything. And then Bobby Burns hit me up, maybe late last year, maybe early this year. And, you know, he was having trouble with his liver, just some health issues. And he literally told me, he was like, hey man, if you get a call from this certain girl and she says that I've passed away, I want you to be the one to break the news. I'm like, don't put that on me.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. But I mean, he truly thought he was, you know, on his deathbed or whatever. Cause that's the kind of the diagnosis the doctors were giving him, but he luckily, he's down in Dallas, Texas. He's, you know, they've got some good, I guess liver doctors down there. Mm-hmm. They went in and got him back going. And I, you know, maybe kind of being right there close to death or whatever, he hit me up and says, you know, if you want to do this, let's do a show. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right. I mean, which it's funny if you ask Preston, you know, Preston Nash, the drummer that we have for this, that was the drummer of the new release era, things like that. Anytime we talk about getting back together, I'm like, I want a classic lineup. Obviously Jason passed away, but I want at least three of us to be somewhat classic, you know, from the early 2000s. And so I'm always like, we got to get Preston. And Preston lives, I live in Louisville. He lives in Indy. We're like an hour and a half, 2 hours away from each other. Mm-hmm. So basically about once a year I hit him with the text, hey, if we get this together, will you do it? And he's always like, yeah, but you know, we'll see what happens kind of thing. But this last time Bobby comes out and he's like, all right, man, if you want to do this, let's do it. I contacted, Mikey from Snot. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey man, you know, who's dealing, you know, it's kind of the same situation, classic band, singer passed away, you know, anniversary of a record kind of stuff, all that stuff kind of lined up similarly. So I was like, hey man, you know, what's the name of your booking agent? He gave it to me, you know, and I emailed the guy and I'm like, hey man, would you be interested in dealing with a Primer 55 25th anniversary? And an immediate yes. Like he jumped, the booking agent jumped right on it. And I was like, so I kind of, you know, put two, you know, lined everything up, got everything going. And, it's been fun, man. It's like Bobby's fired up again. It's fun to see him kind of be Bobby Burns again, you know, kind of be in charge of a band, Bobby Burns, and getting everything together and, you know, being a shithead again sometimes and things like that. You know, he's kind of, it's kind of, hey, I need this today. I need this done by blah, 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 all that stuff. Like, you know, it's as much as, you know, sometimes he can be a little overbearing when it comes to that stuff. It's been awesome to see him, see that guy again, you know, cause there for a long, I mean, when all this stuff was going down with his liver, like he told me he was proud of me. And for him to say that, like, that's, I was like, oh shit, he really is dying. Like, you know, as it, so to kind of see Bobby kind of come back to life, the last few months has been awesome. And from what came, you know, from what started out to be one show, turned into a possibility of opening on a bigger band's reunion tour, you know, which kind of fell through, turned into, well, let's do our own little run. And, you know, now it's like, there are more tours like being booked as we speak. And I'm just like, I'm ecstatic for him. I'm ecstatic for the band. You know, I want to see Bobby back out there, because Bobby's one of those musicians that should be on stage, should be playing. You know, I sat in the studio one time with him. We did a side band after Primer, and as we were recording some stuff, and the, you know, he's like, I think I'm gonna throw a solo right here, and just, you know, immediately whipped out an awesome solo. I'm like, all right, guitar solo guy. You know, it's he's just one of those dudes that just should be playing music, should be out there. That's what he does. That's where he needs to be. And to kind of see it all kind of coming back together. I love it. I love to see it come back together. Honestly, I mean, I wish Jason was here with us, and to kind of see I think he would have been over the moon with all of the kind of that new metal resurgence. You know, all the bands of that era kind of coming back around again, you know, doing the nostalgia stuff. And I think he'd have been really into it. And I would love to have kind of gotten, you know, Bobby and Jason back together and touring as Primer and all that stuff. I mean, there's early episodes of Talk to Me where I'm like, I don't care if I'm involved. I just want to see those two guys work together again. Right. And then obviously with Jason passing in like what, 2018, which is crazy. It's already been that long. It is funny though, being a, you know, I'm a giant Pantera fan, and you know, No Dime, No Pantera and all that nonsense. And then the initial, like, you know, Primer 55 tour announced, blah, blah, blah. And we're totally getting the No Jason, No Primer type stuff. And I'm like, well, it's kind of hard. You know, I would love for Jason to be here doing this stuff, but we can't. So we've got, we've got Donnie coming in, on vocals for this, who did some stuff with Bobby back a few years ago. It was actually funny. I helped to get Donnie in the band in 2008. And then I think we did one show together. Like, I think it was like Donnie's first show and my last show were the same show. And then they went on to do some touring together and stuff like that. But yeah, actually I opened an old email the other day, like an old email account. And I think I had like the emails from, like, Bobby's like, hey, check out this dude, Donnie. And then I'm like talking to Donnie, you know, this is like, so I got him in the band and then I left. So, but yeah, I'm excited to do this run. It starts in October, a nice little quick run. It's like 7 shows in 8 days. So, My old bones are going to be creaking and muscles are going to be sore and all that stuff. And I'm going to, you know, hopefully I don't get up there looking like Ace Frehley and just stumble all over myself. And hopefully we're more Slaughter or Quiet Riot than we are Ace Frehley when we get up there to play. How about that?
You're going to be involved in all of the live shows?
As of now, yes. You know, gotta work some stuff around with my actual day job, but once we get all that figured out, but yeah, as of right now, yes.
Okay, cool. And it's just shows for now. There's nothing about maybe new music at some point down the road, or has that even been addressed?
I don't know how much is going to be talked about or whatnot, but yeah, I mean, there's talk about new music. There's always talk about music, so we'll see what happens with that. I mean, from where at this point where Bobby's at with the band, it seems to be back to being a full functioning band at this moment. So I think that anything to do with a normal band is back on the table, you know, music, tours, you know, photo shoots and t-shirts and anything you can think of that goes along with the band is on the table right now, because and which is awesome. You know, I'm glad because, well, the other thing too, is doing the podcast over the years, the amount of guests that I had on, you know, post-interview, pre-interview, that just wanted to throw out a quick, hey man, grew up a big Primer fan, or I listened to Primer when I was in middle school, you know, any of that stuff, you know, or, you know, people that listen to the podcast, like, hey man, I love what you're doing on the podcast. Just want to let you know, I'm a big Primer 55 fan, never got to see him live, any, all that stuff, like how much that built over the years. And I don't think Bobby knew that was going on, because he just wasn't, you know, tuned into Blabbermouth each week and all that nonsense, or every day. Like, it just wasn't something on his radar. So I'm like, no, dude, like there's this underground swelling of, you know, when you open up the Louder Than Life announcement and Dry Kill Logic's on the main stage, like Primer 55 needs to be back together.
Right.
You know, and I love Dry Kill Logic, and that's not a dig at them. I'm just saying that, like, that's just, that goes to show you when Spine Shank and the Union Underground and Head P and all those bands are like main stage bands or high up on the bill on the side stage bands, like that just shows you that Primer needs to get their asses back together and get back out there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we've seen it in the previous decade or so before the switch over to a lot of the 90s bands.
Yeah.
We've seen that a lot of bands have made that success. They've successfully ridden that wave for as long as they could. And a lot of these 90s bands are now coming back, and hopefully you guys can do something similar, you know, where you take advantage of, you know, this groundswell of popularity with bands that are doing a lot of stuff. And even newer bands. I listened to the new Turnstile the other day. I'm like, this should have come out in the 90s. I'm like, right. You know, this wasn't what I expected at all. There's a lot of different things. Even Alex Lifeson from Rush has a band called Envy of None.
Okay.
And that sounds totally 90s alternative rock. I mean, it's ridiculous, and not in a Nirvana sense. It's like in a Garbage sense, you know, it's something like that that has caught a lot of people off guard. And I know that a lot of Alex Lifeson fans are like, why isn't he doing something more like Rush?
Yeah, right.
And he's basically said, you know, I found this singer, she's great, and she allows me now to write in this, you know, this form of music around her voice.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
you know, growing up and we saw it with the 80s bands, you know, there was definitely that moment in time where, you know, the Cinderellas and Slaughters and all those bands that now, you know, get up and play in an M3 and, you know, massive crowds, you know, had their moments in the clubs where, you know, might've been half full or a quarter full or nobody there, you know what I'm saying? And like,
right.
And my last Primer 55 tour we did, I did it in 2008 or 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. And, you know, we were playing some pretty rough shows. And I always joke, it was like, there might be 30 people in the crowd, but like there were 30 fans, and it was different. There was a difference between being in like a local band and there's 30 people in the crowd and you're trying to win them over to like, you're playing in front of 30 people and they know all the music and they like, you know, hadn't seen you since Ozfest or never got to see you. So like, this is their moment with the band. And like,
yeah.
So you're on stage and you're looking out and it's, you know, a 500 cap room with 30 people in it. You might as well have been playing to an empty warehouse, and they're in the crowd watching one of their favorite bands. So so you still have to like put on that whole, like, if it's five people or five, you know, 500,000 people, we're going to play the same show, like all that nonsense. But you have to like do that. You have to like get your mindset around that. And it's not easy. It's not like you can just turn that on. You know, you have to like put on a good show for the people that are there, because like I said, they are truly fans of the music and they are so pumped to see you. It's not their fault that they're one of 30 people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, so you're like trying to put on a good show, but I think that this time around, you know, we're hitting that nice pocket of nostalgia. You know, people of our generation or our age range might have a little bit more disposable income, you know, come out, relive their youth a little bit. I mean, that's what I'm doing, you know, go out and relive my youth a little bit too, you know? you know, I hadn't been on stage. Actually, I hadn't been on stage since I think in 2011, I got up with Primer and did Loose with them in like one time. And, but other than that, I got on stage a couple of years ago at a nu metal night. It was a nu metal night here in town. They invited me to play three songs. You know, I did Korn song, Deftone song, whatnot. And I was just like, oh yeah. And my wife had never really seen me on stage before. And she was like, oh, she's like, I've never seen you that happy. I've never seen you smile like that. So I was like, whenever this type of stuff comes up, she's like, I can't say no. She, you know, she's not going to be like, you can't go on tour. She's like, I know that's what makes you happy. You're going to go do what makes you happy. I can't take that away from you. So, I mean, so I've got an awesome support system. And, you know, just to get back out there, my kids are a little bit older. So it's not like, you know, I'm leaving them. That was the one thing that what got me off a tour to begin with was my son was about two or three at the time. And, you know, we're out there playing to nobody in these shit clubs, making no money. And I get a call from my son's mom. We weren't together, but we were cordial and, you know, everything was fine. But she was having a day. She was stressed out. I could hear him crying in the background. I'm out here playing to nobody. And I'm like, what am I doing? I was like, I need to go home and be a dad. And then, you know, now my kids are, you know, my youngest is about to be 11 and he thinks it's cool what dad does. You know, he thinks it's cool that dad plays music and he can get on stage and do things like that. So, you know, he's at more of an age where I think he would understand, hey, you know, dad's going to be gone for a couple of weeks, but I'll be back, you know, to where he's not like four or five where he just doesn't understand. So I'm excited, man. I think I think it's a good time. To go back out. I think it's a good time for music. I think it's a good time for shows. I think it's going to be fun and get back out there and play for everybody. It's going to be fun.
Cool. That sounds really awesome. And like I said, I hope it all works out and
yeah,
to you know, get the planets to align there and that you guys are able to take this as far as you guys can.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll be fun. Hopefully, you know, hopefully next year do all the Danny Wimmer shows, you know, get on some festivals, you know, maybe another band will look on the lineup and be like, why is Primer 55 on the main stage? Like, you know, like we got to get our band back together. You know, this is a bunch of bullshit. So yeah, I think that'll be fun. Hopefully we'll be that band to somebody else.
There you go. You'll provoke the Boba Flex reunion.
Right. Yeah, there we go.
Yes, yes, Baco. I know that they're still together, kind of as right. The Lonely Ones, but Boba Flex, the original Boba Flex. What else did I have here? Oh, last question for you.
All right,
you have two things regarding the Deftones behind you. What did you think of the new single?
I think it's funny, man. My wife is like, she likes like three bands and Deftones happen to be one of them. And we were out and 6 o'clock Eastern was when it dropped here. So like we were in the car and she was like refreshing Spotify. And as soon as it popped out, she played it. We listened to it like, you know, probably 10 times in a row. I think it's a good indicator of what the album is going to be. It wasn't anything groundbreaking. I think it'll be a good song if they play it live. Mm-hmm. It does seem to be, you know, good for an arena. You know, like I've been saying in the last few shows, and it's just like we went to see Deftones a few months ago at an arena, packed out. I'm like, what's going on? Because you know, Deftones have been a lot of people's like a lot of bands' favorite band, and they've inspired a lot of bands, not just nu metal bands, but like shoegaze bands and hardcore bands. Like they're one band that like everybody can kind of go back to and agree on when it comes to musicians and things like that. So we go to the show in Nashville and it's the crowd's like 50-50, you know, like 40-year-old dudes and like teenagers. And we're like, where are all these kids coming from? Like and they're all dressed in baggy pants. They're all like, they look like me in the 90s. And we looked around and it was crazy. Like we took my stepson who just turned 18. That was his first ever concert and he's blown away. And, and they crushed. And it was such a good show. Like they had all the lights and they had all the screens and they had all of the this and the that, and they put on one hell of a show. It was probably one of the better Deftones shows I've ever seen. And I've been seeing them since 95, 96. New single. I'm definitely looking forward to the album. I think it's a good song, and you know, I think it's just a good precursor to what's coming, you know, so I can't wait for the next single. How about that?
Yeah. I've seen them once, middle of the day at a festival here in Spain, hotter than hell. Yeah. And it was like a religious experience. It was one of the best shows that I've ever seen. Yeah. So it was amazing. They do that, man. Got to see them and Faith No More on the same bill. So we went home happy.
that 97 Faith No More show that I saw, opening band, Limp Bizkit. little known Limp Bizkit, pre-Faith Limp Bizkit. So there you go. Yeah.
Awesome. I appreciate you hanging out for as long as you have today with me. This has been fun and easy to do. And hope that this comes across that way to anyone listening or watching this episode. So anything you want to mention before leaving, anything you want to promote?
No, man, just, if you're in the area of any of these Primer 55 shows, please come out and say hello. And then obviously check out the David Ellison show on the David Ellison David Ellison YouTube channel, or just search your favorite podcast app. And then, Talk To Me is going strong. That's actually, I think the next episode is Cliff from Drycologic. So. So there you go. So I think that'll be a good one to get out there. But yeah, it's a wild ride, and come jump on it with me.
Awesome. And on that note, we will end the show. Thank you, Mr. Toomey. Hopefully it won't be another 120 episodes before I get you back on here.
Crazy, man. Yeah. Always good to see you. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. On that note, folks, we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Thank you for watching the Signals from Mars live stream. You can watch the show live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch, or check out replays on YouTube. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.